Guys?
No. They were apprentices of a man I know. Why did you call them shadows? Because at that moment they'd been touched by the power of not doing. And since they aren't as stupid as you are, they shifted into something quite different from what you know. I didn't want you to look at them for that reason. It would have only injured you. I didn't have any more questions. I wasn't hungry, either. Don Juan ate heartily and seemed to be in an excellent mood. But I felt dejected. Suddenly, a consuming fatigue possessed me. I realized that Don Juan's path was too arduous for me. I commented that I didn't have the qualifications to become a sorcerer. "Perhaps another meeting with Mezcalito will help you," he said. I assured him that that was the farthest thing from my mind, and that I wouldn't even consider the possibility. "Very drastic things have to happen to you in order for you to allow your body to profit from all you've learned," he said. I ventured the opinion that since I wasn't an Indian, I wasn't really qualified to live the unusual life of a sorcerer. "Perhaps, if I could disentangle myself from all my commitments, I could fare in your world a little better," I said. "Or if I would go into the wilderness with you and live there. As it is now, the fact I have a foot in both worlds makes me useless in either." He stared at me for a long moment. "This is your world," he said, pointing to the busy street outside the window. "You are a man of that world. And out there, in that world, is your hunting ground. There's no way to escape the doing of our world. So what a warrior does is to turn his world into his hunting ground. As a hunter, a warrior knows that the world is made to be used, so he uses every bit of it. A warrior is like a pirate that has no qualms in taking and using anything he wants, except that the warrior doesn't mind or he doesn't feel insulted when he's used and taken himself." XVII. A Worthy Opponent. Tuesday, December 11th, 1962. My traps were perfect. The setting was correct. I saw rabbits, squirrels, and other rodents, quail, and birds, but I couldn't catch anything at all during the whole day. Don Juan had told me as we left his house in the early morning that I had to wait that day for a gift of power, an exceptional animal that might be lured into my traps and whose flesh I could dry for power food. Don Juan seemed to be in a pensive mood. He didn't make a single suggestion or comment. Near the end of the day, he finally made a statement. "Someone is interfering with your hunting," he said. "Who?" I asked, truly surprised. He looked at me and smiled and shook his head in a gesture of disbelief. "You act as if you didn't know who," he said, "and you've known who all day." I was going to protest, but I saw no point in it. I knew he was going to say La Catalina, and if that was the kind of knowledge he was talking about, then he was right. I did know who. "We either go home now," he continued, "or we wait until dark and use the twilight to catch her." He appeared to be waiting for my decision. I wanted to leave. I began to gather some thin rope that I was using, but before I could voice my wish, he stopped me with a direct command. "Sit down," he said. It would be a simpler and more sober decision to just leave now. But this is a peculiar case, and I think we must stay. This show is just for you.
What do you mean?
Someone is interfering with you, in particular, so that makes it your show. I know who, and you also know who.
You scare me, I said.
Not me, he replied, laughing. That woman who's out there prowling is scaring you. He paused, as if he were waiting for the effect of his words to show on me. I had to admit that I was terrified. Over a month before, I had had a horrendous confrontation with a sorceress called La Catalina. I had faced her at the risk of my life, because Don Juan had convinced me that she was after his life, and that he was incapable of fending off her onslaughts. After I had come in contact with her, Don Juan disclosed to me that she had never really been of any danger to him, and that the whole affair had been a trick, not in the sense of a malicious prank, but in the sense of a trap to ensnare me. His method was so unethical to me that I became furious with him. Upon hearing my angry outburst, Don Juan had begun to sing some Mexican tunes. He imitated popular crooners, and his renditions were so comical that I had ended up laughing like a child. He entertained me for hours. I never knew he had such a repertoire of idiotic songs. "Let me tell you something," he'd finally said on that occasion. "If we wouldn't be tricked, we would never learn. The same thing happened to me, and it'll happen to anyone. The art of a benefactor is to take us to the brink. A benefactor can only point the way and trick. I tricked you before. You remember the way I recaptured your hunter's spirit, don't you? You yourself told me that hunting made you forget about plants. You were willing to do a lot of things in order to be a hunter, things you wouldn't have done in order to learn about plants. Now, you must do a lot more in order to survive." He stared at me and broke into a fit of laughter. "This is all crazy," I said. "We are rational beings." "You're rational," he retorted. "I'm not." "Of course you are," I insisted. "You're one of the most rational men I've ever met." "All right," he exclaimed. "Let's not argue. I am rational. So what?" I involved him in the argument of why it was necessary for two rational beings to proceed in such an insane way as we had proceeded with the Lady Witch. "You're rational, all right," he said fiercely. "And that means you believe that you know a lot about the world, but do you? Do you really? You've only seen the acts of people. Your experiences are limited only to what people have done to you or to others. You know nothing about this mysterious, unknown world." He signaled me to follow him to my car, and we drove to the small Mexican town nearby. I didn't ask what we were going to do. He made me park my car by a restaurant, and then we walked around the bus depot and the general store. Don Juan walked on my right side, leading me. Suddenly, I became aware that someone else was walking side by side with me to my left. But before I had time to turn to look, Don Juan made a fast and sudden movement. He leaned forward, as if he were picking something from the ground, and then grabbed me by the armpit when I nearly stumbled over him. He dragged me to my car and didn't let go of my arm, even to allow me to unlock the door. I fumbled with the keys for a moment. He shoved me gently into the car and then got in himself. "Drive slowly and stop in front of the store," he said. When I'd stopped, Don Juan signaled me with a nod of his head to look. La Catalina was standing at the place where Don Juan had grabbed me. I recoiled involuntarily. The woman took a couple of steps towards the car and stood there defiantly. I scrutinized her carefully and concluded that she was a beautiful woman. She was very dark and had a plump body, but she seemed to be strong and muscular. She had a round, full face with high cheekbones and two long braids of jet black hair. What surprised me the most was her youth. She was at the most in her early 30s. "Let her come closer if she wants," Don Juan whispered. She took 3 or 4 steps towards my car and stopped perhaps 10 feet away. We looked at each other. At that moment, I felt there was nothing threatening about her. I smiled and waved at her. She giggled as if she were a shy little girl and covered her mouth. Somehow, I felt delighted. I turned to Don Juan to comment on her appearance and behavior, and he scared me half to death with a yell. "Don't turn your back to that woman, damn it!" he said in a forceful voice. I quickly turned to look at the woman. She had taken another couple of steps towards my car and was standing barely 5 feet away from my door. She was smiling. Her teeth were big and white and very clean. There was something eerie about her smile, however. It wasn't friendly. It was a contained grin. Only her mouth smiled. Her eyes were black and cold and were staring at me fixedly. I experienced a chill all over my body. Don Juan began to laugh in a rhythmical cackle. After a moment's wait, the woman slowly backed away and disappeared among people. We drove away, and Don Juan speculated that if I didn't tighten up my life and learn, she was going to step on me as one steps on a defenseless bug. "She is the worthy opponent I told you I'd found for you," he said. Don Juan said that we had to wait for an omen before we knew what to do with the woman who was interfering with my hunting. "If we see or hear a crow, we'll know for sure that we can wait, and we'll also know where to wait," he added. He slowly turned around in a complete circle, scanning all the surroundings. "This isn't the place to wait," he said in a whisper. We began to walk towards the east. It was already fairly dark. Suddenly, two crows flew out from behind some tall bushes and disappeared behind a hill. Don Juan said that the hill was our destination. Once we arrived there, he circled it and chose a place facing the southeast at the bottom of the hill. He cleaned the dry twigs and leaves and other debris from a circular spot 5 or 6 feet in diameter. I attempted to help him, but he refused me with a strong movement of his hand. He put his finger over his lips and made a gesture of silence. When he had finished, he pulled me to the center of the circle, made me face the south, away from the hill, and whispered in my ear that I had to imitate his movements. He began a sort of dance, making a rhythmical thump with his right foot. It consisted of 7 even beats spaced by a cluster of 3 fast thumps. I tried to adapt myself to his rhythm, and after a few clumsy attempts, I was more or less capable of reproducing the same thumping. "What's this for?" I whispered in his ear. He told me, also in a whisper, that I was thumping like a rabbit, and that sooner or later the prowler would be attracted by the noise and would show up to see what was going on. Once I'd copied the rhythm, Don Juan ceased to thump himself, but had me continue, marking the pace with a movement of his hand. From time to time, he would listen attentively, with his head slightly tilted to the right, seemingly to pick out noises in the chaparral. At one point, he signaled me to stop, and he remained in a most alert position. It was as if he were ready to spring up and jump on an unknown and unseen assailant. Then he motioned me to continue the thumping, and after a while, he stopped me again. Every time I stopped, he listened with such a concentration that every fiber in his body seemed to be tense to the point of bursting. Suddenly he jumped to my side and whispered in my ear that the twilight was at its full power. I looked around. The chaparral was a dark mass, and so were the hills and the rocks. The sky was dark blue, and I couldn't see the clouds anymore. The whole world seemed to be a uniform mass of dark silhouettes which didn't have any visible boundaries. I heard the eerie, distant cry of an animal, a coyote, or perhaps a nightbird. It happened so suddenly that I didn't pay attention to it, but Don Juan's body jerked a bit. I felt its vibration as he stood next to me. "Here we go," he whispered.